Shiva Prabhupada, Shri Bhakti Vai Bhava Ki, Grantaraj, Shri Bhagavatam Ki, Giriraj, Maharaj Ki, Janitai Gopraman Ki. Anything else?
If one is self-controlled, then he will be respected as well. Everybody will respond to himself.
Has to be. Any other points? Points. Points. Okay, so we see in the beginning of the chapter that Maharaj Parikshit is interested to understand how a demon like Ritrasura could be such a great devotee. How could someone be born in a situation where he is demoniac, yet he is exalted in consciousness? So then, Sukadeva Goswami then begins to narrate about Chitraketu Maharaj and how he was visited by Angira Muni, and we heard of many important Vedic cultural points in terms of how to receive a gift and so forth. And then we hear that Chitraketu, he reveals his heart and his mind to Angira, and Angira blesses him and says that you will have a child, that he will be the source of great happiness and great misery. So tonight we'll finish the chapter. Now there's not many purports, so we'll go from verses 32 to 61. And we'll hear about how the child was born to Maharaj Chitraketu and his wife, whose name is
Krita Jyoti.
Any other points? Thereafter, in due course of time, a son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Shurasen were extremely pleased. King Chitraketu was especially pleased after purifying himself by bathing and by decorating himself with ornaments. He engaged learned Brahmanas in offering benedictions to the child and performing the birth ceremony. And to the Brahmanas who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity of gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows, 600 million cows. So this is Vedic culture. Vedic culture means that when you give a gift to someone, it is something that actually has value. Whereas we see these days in Kali Yuga that when you give gifts to people, most of the time they have no real value. Just like usually when we give something to someone, it is usually made of plastic, which is a valueless substance. What's that?
Recycled
plastic. Okay, you'll have to explain the purport of that one to me. So, I saw an interesting article about how one lady here in Melbourne, she took a vow for 1 year she would not buy anything which contained plastic. So why don't some of you try to take that vow for 1 week? That you will not buy anything which has plastic involved. It's not an easy thing to do, and you'll see how widespread this phenomenon of plastic is, an artificial substance which is extremely toxic and has no value whatsoever. So generally these days, this being Kali Yuga, when we give someone a gift, usually it is made of plastic. Or it is made of some other substance or something else which also has no value. So this is the nature of the modern world. Well, do you want to sit over there? Okay, just go for it. Yeah, that's good. So, these days, generally, when we give gifts or receive gifts, they have very little real value. Whereas in the previous times, if you gave a gift to someone, it would have real value. In other words, you see what Chitraketu is giving here to the Brahmanas. Gold, silver, horses, cows, villages, you know, something which actually has value, something you can actually do something with. Well, these days, we give someone a Maya card. You just give the card, right, and it says Maya or Target or something. What is it? Coles card. Well, what a good present. Have a Coles card.
All the gifts we have to say, we don't want to use it, we don't want
it. When you get something that you don't.
Yes, we generally it happens any time when you have a big function at home, you give a lot of gifts. You look at whether that gift has a name or not. No name, not useful, give it off to others. So the same gift goes around.
Yeah. That's generally in the system. Usually on my birthday I do like that. You get things that you don't really want or need. So then, you know, you wait in the next year, then you give that to someone else for their birthday. And just make sure you don't give it to someone who's going to see that who knows that you got it from a particular person. Just like Danda Karanya Prabhu, then I got one jumper off one devotee, so then I gave it to him. Because I knew that that devotee would not see him. So then, you know, as long as you just got to be very careful in re-gifting. Like that. But actually, it's brahminical. Because what is the brahmana's duty? The brahmana's duty is to give charity, to accept charity and to give charity. So the brahmana will take, he will accept, and then whatever is too much or unnecessary, then he gives that again in charity. It's actually a bona fide system. You just have to be very careful, that's all. Because these days people are sentimental. Previously you didn't have to worry. You could do that thing and people would not feel offended, because it's a culture actually. Because if you give something to a brahmana and then if he cannot use it, then he'll re-gift it. But these days you have to be a little sensitive. Don't get caught. So, people give these things, or they give you a cash gift. They give you some money. So if you actually look at what you have in your hand, it's just paper. There's no value whatsoever like that. Of course, we attach value to it. This is a monetary system. It represents something, Lakshmi. But actually, there's no value. Whereas previously, you would give someone gold, or you give them silver, or cows. You give them something auspicious. So, the part of the culture of ISKCON is to reintroduce this system. So, whose birthday is it next?
Mine.
Your birthday is soon? Okay. So, make sure you give to Mataji, you make sure you give something valuable. We can reintroduce this culture into ISKCON. Now, they'll give valuable things. Okay. Cows are a little difficult these days. I think by law you're not allowed to keep cows in the suburbs in Melbourne. You're not allowed to keep cows. But actually, here in the back of the temple, when this place was built like 100 years ago, they were actually stables. The men's toilets, they were stables for horses. And also in this corner, there used to be a building for stables where the sheds are now, like that. So actually, stables were here. Back in those days, you could keep animals in the suburbs. You could have horses and maybe even cows. It's actually illegal now to have a cow in the suburbs. The whole system, the whole culture has disappeared.
Many dogs.
Very valuable animals. You know that pastime where Prabhupada is walking? I told that one. Prabhupada was walking down the road in, I think it was Beverly Hills in America, like a very so-called upper-class suburb. So Prabhupada was walking down, and Prabhupada looked into the driveway. There was a big car, big Cadillac. Prabhupada said, "One day we will have a car like that for Krishna." And all the devotees said, "Jai Prabhupada." And then Prabhupada walked down to the next house, and he looked in the big, beautiful house. Prabhupada said, "One day we will have a house like that for Krishna." And all the devotees said, "Jai Prabhupada." And then the next house he went to, and one dog ran down to the fence. It was barking at Prabhupada and the devotees. And Prabhupada said, "One day we will have a dog like that for Krishna." Everyone said, "Jai Prabhupada." And Prabhupada turned around and he said, "You fools." He said, "What do we want a dog for?" Okay. Another pastime, because I've been watching these videos, you know, Prabhupada memories, Prabhupada's disciples are speaking. Very good, very interesting videos. So, Ambarish Prabhu, who is Alfred Ford, so he used to get association with Prabhupada. So they went on a morning walk, and then they came back, and then they got into the car. So Prabhupada got into the back seat of the car, and then Ambarish Prabhu got into the other side, and he sat next to Prabhupada. And then there's about another 10 devotees outside. So they're all kind of moving around because they wanted to see, you know, there's 10 devotees, and they all wanted to go back with Prabhupada in that car. And there's other cars there, so everyone was kind of moving in. You know, going around doing the whole disciple thing, you know, trying to like discreetly get in without, you know, because Prabhupada was there, he was watching the whole thing, so everyone was moving around and doing all these strange things, and Prabhupada looked at Ambarish and he said, "My disciples are crazy." Quite humorous. So, in the Vedic times, then people would give gifts which are of value, like that. Even for a brahmana, you can give gifts like fruit, like flowers, auspicious natural items. items which have natural opulence. This is considered to be very appropriate. I've seen in Mayapur that when Jnanivas Prabhu and Pankajangri Prabhu, sometimes they are there, and they're invited for a particular event, then the devotees offer them fruits, like a plate of fruits, like that, as a gift for brahmanas. It's considered auspicious. And then after the ceremony, then they sit there and then they begin to eat some of the fruits. So it means it's like a practical thing. So this is appropriate, to give things which are naturally opulent, like that. And especially these days, I know that I observe, especially with the children, with the children's birthdays, they get so many presents which are completely worthless and completely useless, and usually they break within a few days. Yeah, everyone just gives them a whole lot of plastic things, and actually they don't really need these things like that. I remember my brother, when I was a little boy, we had Christmas, and at Christmas time the children get very spoiled, so my parents, my aunties, my uncles, they brought us so many presents, all the children. So Christmas Day, and we open up all the presents and so many presents. And then my brother, he was about 4 years old, the whole day he went out into the backyard and he played with two pieces of wood and a nail. He just got two pieces of wood and he just pushed the nail through, and then he took the nail out and changed the pieces and put the nail in again. So one nail and two pieces, the whole Christmas day he just played with that. He was happy. So my parents could have saved hundreds of dollars by just giving him two pieces of wood and a nail for Christmas. And he would have been happy. So these days we spoil the children, especially we give them too many useless things which they don't actually need, which don't have any benefit. And especially for the environment, we have to understand plastic is very detrimental to the environment. The production of plastic creates a great deal of pollution in the environment. It's not a natural substance. So we should try to avoid plastic, actually. Especially as devotees, you see now in some of the supermarkets, you have to get the bags. If you get the plastic bag, you have to pay for it. So devotees should do all those things. Quite often we notice devotees don't do those things. But actually devotees should be doing those things. You shouldn't be using the plastic bags and all this thing. And to people, even like we see devotees, they get so much things and just throw them away. It's just a consumer culture these days. People just throwing things, it's slightly broken, it has a small crack, throw it away. Like that. Devotees should not be like that. We should fix things. Just like if the dhoti has a rip in them or something, you should sew it. Just immediately people just discard things these days. It's not a good mentality. It's not the natural. So devotees should be environmentally conscious. Like, any points so far? What's the question?
Whenever they have to give a gift, do we really consider other person, what he really requests, and ask him in that way it is better for us? We decide something for him and give it to him. What is better?
Better you give something that's relevant. So maybe you should find out what the person wants. So you have to find out what the devotee wants or what he needs, like that. If you can find out somehow. You have to be a little intelligent or like that to try to find it. Any other points? Okay. As a cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, the beneficent King Chitraketu, to increase the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirable things to everyone. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, his affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when King Chitraketu, after great difficulty, received a son, his affection for the son increased day after day. The mother's attraction and attention to the son, like that of the child's father, excessively increased. The other wives, seeing Kritajyoti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with a desire to have a son. or with a desire to have sons. So in the material world, this is natural. To have children, it is natural. As Chanakya says, Grihastha life without children, it is a desert. So it is natural to have the children. It is a natural desire. Especially for the women, it is a very strong desire, it is a very natural desire. Women feel unfulfilled, generally, if they do not have children. So it is the duty of the husband to give children to the wife. So it should always be preached like this. We should not preach artificial renunciation in ISKCON. That sometimes you'll hear devotees who are a little fanatical or immature, they will advise others, oh no, do not have children, because there's so much trouble involved. If you have children, it's simply it's difficulty, and it's simply just trouble, which is true. It is so much austerity. But we should not preach like this. Actually, we should preach, no, you should have children. That is completely natural. And it is necessary, actually, especially for family life. Unless the Grihasthas are very renounced by nature, then, okay, that's permissible. That's their choice. But generally, they should do like that. So we should encourage devotees. Just like I was saying last week, that Veer Krishna Maharaji told my godbrother, Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, he said, you should have 10 children. So this is the instruction. In other words, he is enthusing him to absorb himself in family life and fulfill your material desires. If you do not fulfill your material desires in Krishna consciousness, you may have to take birth again in the material world. So your material desires need to be fulfilled. So you should have children, you should have wife, and you should live happily ever after.
What about the Bhagavad Gita verse you said that will just should not be fulfilled at the end of the second chapter?
What is that verse?
As the rivers enter into the ocean and the ocean never gets disturbed, the living entity similarly should be. The
self-realized
ocean, what is that? Just the ocean that the river is always still like that, like, like how a devotee, like he should be very steady, like how the ocean
should not be disturbed with the desires, because the ocean is not disturbed by the rivers coming into the ocean. So we should not fulfill desires only if we are too disturbed.
Okay, any questions or comments? That has wrecked my whole class. Thank you, Rasa.
Coincidentally, I was hearing Brother Bhagavat Maharaj's lecture today as well, and he made this point. He was talking about sakama karma in the context of talking about desire. And he said that there are instructions, certainly in the scriptures, that one must be akama. Krishna is saying akama, but Krishna consciousness is all accommodative. So everyone has to embrace Krishna consciousness. Not everyone is based on it, can be paramahansa. So therefore, they come in, if someone is interested in music, instead of singing Bollywood songs or Hollywood songs, they come and sing Kirtan, there are musical instruments here, they fulfill those desires. But because there is an element of Krishna consciousness, it purifies them all the same. So the extent of their material desires, maybe they are singing 80% Hollywood and 20% Kirtan. Tomorrow they will sing 80% Kirtan and 20% Hollywood songs. So it's that way it works, mechanism. And all encompassing this. Everyone is welcome. So, both are right. Yes, so Krishna is giving that goal that one must become like that. But at the end of the day, that's also true. That instead of, otherwise, it's very difficult for people to come into Krishna consciousness.
Are you satisfied with that, Rasa?
Yeah, I said one should not pursue the desires unless it's really, really disturbed. That's what I said.
Okay. So now I'll keep saying what I was going to say, because it may be different to what you're saying, so, but I'll keep saying because that's what I'm going to say. So basically, one needs to fulfill one's material desires. One should not be artificial in this material world. If one has desires, one should fulfill them, but fulfill them in Krishna consciousness. In other words, it is natural to have children, it is natural to get married, these things are there, but you should do them in Krishna consciousness. which means we follow rules, we follow regulations, that we are governed by scriptural injunctions. But one should fulfill those material desires. Otherwise, one will remain unfulfilled, and the danger is at the end of one's life, one's mind can still be disturbed. I've seen devotees who have had an unhappy grihastha ashram, and at the end, when they're in an older age, their mind is still disturbed. So it is important that we fulfill these things in a natural way, in a proper way, and satisfy the desires properly. And the grihastha should be affectionate to each other, so that everyone becomes satisfied, so that at the end you can renounce naturally. So that is our philosophy. Of course, Krishna may choose for it to be a different way anyway. Even though you may desire to have a happy life, it doesn't always work out so happy. Even though you may want a perfect wife or a perfect husband, it doesn't always work out like that. And as we see in this pastime, you may want good children, but it doesn't always work out like that. So we have to be accepting of what Krishna will give us, ultimately. Any points?
My personal experience shows that while fulfilling one's desires, one should be conscious of the fact that they are fulfilling the desires. Otherwise, that time will pass away so quickly that you will feel that you have not really fulfilled your desires. So while fulfilling, you should be conscious of the fact that, well, you are fulfilling the desire in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, I say that my children, Swetha and Abhishek, to me, I feel they have grown so quickly that the fondness of playing the kids and all, sometimes it comes up. Because I feel that maybe I've not spent enough time with them. So therefore, one should be conscious of the fact that, well, they are fulfilling their desires through whatever time factor they are spending, so that at the end of the day, you feel satisfied, yes, you have spent, and therefore there is a further goal.
Yeah, there's a saying in the church organizations that the children of the minister are often the ones who are the most neglected. In other words, the minister, he gets up every Sunday and he gives his sermon and he instructs everyone, yes, you should spend time with your family, you should spend time with your children. But while he's telling everyone that, he's failing to do it himself. So quite often, it's apparently a common feature that the children of the minister, the person who's teaching everyone about God, they get less time with their parents. Then the children do not feel satisfied, and the parents also will have regrets later on in life. Even one of the senior devotees in this temple, one of the senior grihastha, he told me only in the last couple of months, he said, I wish I had spent more time with my children when they were young. Like that. So it's important, you should not neglect these things. My spiritual master said to me when I got married, he said, your first responsibility is your wife. And when you have children, your first responsibility is them. Not preaching and not doing all this other activity, no, it is them first. And then those other things will happen automatically. We have to set a proper example in Krishna consciousness. We should have the best families, the best husbands and the best wives, who always talk to each other and say sweet words and are very affectionate to each other. On a daily basis. Any points? Okay. As King Chitraketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Kritajyoti increased, but gradually he lost affection for the other wives who had no sons. The other queens were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence toward them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamented. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives exactly like a maid servant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. So we can read the purport, check out.
As stated by Chanakya Pandita, a person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. Because a person living at home and living in the forest are equal. Similarly, for a woman who has no son who not cared for by her husband and whose co-wife neglects her, treating her like a maid servant, to go to the forest is better than to remain at home.
Any points here?
Yeah.
That was done by Chitraketu is negligent. Maharaj said, when a devotee is prized, he feels happy. When a devotee is chastised, he feels unhappy. But when a devotee is neglected, he feels miserable. That is what happened. That invoked in the queens, even though they were good queens, initially we hear the description, they were beautiful. And Maharaj also said, a king did not marry an ordinary woman. She should have so many qualities. Then only he will marry. And now what has happened to them because of the neglect? It created enviousness in their heart. And it goes, enviousness and anger go together. Because of that, you know, they done something very bad. The next we will hear that. But Maharaj was telling, the mistake is neglect. You should never neglect a devotee.
Yeah, very good point. Any other points?
The phrase going to the forest here, are we to take it in a literal sense or in the context of renunciation?
In regards to?
The phrase says go to the forest.
If your wife is not speaking sweetly to
you.
So is that what you're asking?
Yeah, is it literally to go to the forest or to actually renounce while still being in?
If your wife is not speaking sweetly to you, is that the context of your...
Yeah, we can take it in that context.
In that context, because since the verse has mentioned that.
Yeah.
Like that. I think a lot of us would be in the forest. And it might get overcrowded there. So, traditionally in Mendes. These days it means the botanical gardens. So we can all meet there for lunchtime and then console each other. Okay. But traditionally, we're talking about the forest traditionally, like that. Not these days, because no one goes to the forest these days. But in the olden days, when it was said like that. People would go to the forest in the previous times. There were vanaprasthas and like that. So it was common. It's not common now.
The big forest has no forest here.
Yes. The forest also is quartered. So
there's food and the station here. Right. So today you go to the forest, there's nothing there. So rather than the metal you got.
So any other points?
This is true in the Chennai also, the point that Shraddhi was mentioning, that the devotees that we've seen in Iskcon, like, you know, so many older devotees, they felt neglected and then they have left them home. So devotee also needs a lot of warmth and there's someone who's caring for them, someone who follows up and keeps in touch with them so that they feel connected to them. And so many devotees are lost because of being, because they felt they were neglected.
Yeah, especially more in the past. It's not as common these days, but in the early days of ISKCON it was very much like that. So, any other points? So, as it is being said here, and as Prabhu pointed out in regards to Radhanath Swami's comment, then this was Chitraketu's great fault that he neglected the many co-wives. And because he neglected the co-wives, so much trouble was caused. So, these days there is no such thing as co-wives. Actually, when Prabhupada began ISKCON, he actually suggested that the men take on more than one wife so the women would have protection. But then they told Prabhupada, they said, it is illegal in the Western countries. Then Prabhupada said, okay, then we cannot do that. So that is not the system these days. But then we have to apply this to the modern system, which means there may only be one wife and one husband, but there should not be neglect on behalf of the husband towards the wife. The husband must be affectionate to the wife. And sometimes men find this difficult because they're less emotional and less affectionate by nature than women. So they do not always give proper affection and love to the female. So this has to be sometimes educated. Men have to be educated in this system. So there's a very good book. It is called Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. At one point in time, it was the second most popular book on the earth in terms of its sales. Very interesting book. If you are having any problems in your married life, then just read that book and just begin to apply a few of the principles, and then generally you can change the dynamics very quickly. Very
well, you know, the book, no problem in life.
Yeah. I know there's no problem, but but still.
Okay, what's the name of the book?
I'll give it to you. There's no problem, but still. It is called Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. It is by Dr. John Gray. It's a very good book, actually. I haven't read it cover to cover, but I have read it in the past, especially when I first got married. There's many, many good things you could read, and they're just, you just apply, I just saw you just apply a few of the basic principles, and the whole dynamic could change very quickly, like that. So it's scientific, actually. So, men should learn to be affectionate to their wives, and the wives should feel cherished and nourished by the husband. Women like to feel like that. It makes them feel emotionally secure, because women need to feel emotionally secure. So they need to be cherished, made to feel cherished and nourished by the husband, protected by the husband. So it means the husband has to put some effort into these things. And then the marriage will become very satisfying. And the women, we've already given classes for the women like that, so I think you've had your instructions in previous classes. Basically, you just have to learn to speak sweetly all the time and every day, eternally. Just speak sweetly to your husband, they'll be satisfied. And throw flower petals in the air whenever he walks into the room. It's also very very potent. And carry a charmer with you wherever you go. These things are also beneficial. But if you can't do all that, then at least speak sweetly to the husband. At least glorify him. When he comes into the room, say, "My dear Prabhu." Like that. So try these things. Like that. The point is, Prabhupada says, the relationship between the husband and wife should be very loving and affectionate. That was Prabhupada's instruction. Should be very loving and very affectionate. Like that. So then the husband will feel satisfied, the wife will feel satisfied. That should be the mood. And sometimes it's hard for devotees to reconcile these things because they think, well, this material world is Maya. This world is illusion. These are just temporary relationships. So I don't have to get into this whole loving and affectionate feeling. But actually, now for a devotee, it should be like that. It should be loving and affectionate between the husband and the wife. There should be genuine affection, genuine feelings, and then both parties will feel satisfied. You'll feel materially fulfilled in your desires, and you'll be able to progress in your Krishna consciousness and go back home, back to Godhead. So, any points? I think there's more, maybe more than one, possibly.
Pardon?
There may be more than one
book on this
manual. I think there is. Jai Srila Prabhu did a course one time, and then I think you're referring to the Chaupati manual, like that.
So we did
that
in our
Yeah, the Chaupati manual that I've looked at, I think it's quite relevant for Indian body devotees. For Western body devotees, I don't know if it would be completely successful.
The principles are the same.
I don't know if I would fully agree. Because the background is quite different like that. Because it's somewhat of a Vedic model.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not Indian. So.
Yeah, that's the point. But we're people coming from a Western background, that's not so easy to fit into that system. it's true what you're saying, ultimately it's the best system, but it's not so easy for the Western devotees like that. Because I know like Western Grihastha couples in this community who are very senior, very advanced, they're not what you call a Vedic model in many respects. You know, it's a totally different situation, because our conditioning is very different in the West. So I'm not saying it's not a good manual, I'm just saying if it's just for Westerners, I think it would be
more conducive, easy to accept for Indians.
Yeah. Because it's written by Indian devotees, and for Indian devotees I think it's very applicable. For Western devotees I think it's applicable, but there's just some things there which may need to be adjusted, or you may have to be quite liberal in the presentation. Because if you say to the Western devotees, oh, you should be like this, this and this, usually they'll just say, well, you know, you're an Indian. You know, you're coming from a different culture altogether, and it's very, very different way of life, I guess. But John Kilaparu wrote a manual at one point. He wrote a course about Grihastha life like that. So that might be more relevant for the Westerners. Any other points? Okay. How are you liking the class so far?
Great.
Really?
Oh,
wow. Really? Wow. You're going to have a really happy marriage when you grow up. I'm not saying that. I'm saying when you grow up. Just enjoy your soccer, and then later on. Such good kids. At least the big one is good. Even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Kritajyoti's opulence in possessing a son, Kritajyoti's co-wives always burned in envy, which became extremely strong. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence. Being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Queen Kritajyoti walked within the house, thinking that her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand that he was dead. That was 44, thank you for the last one. So, the quality which brings us into the material world originally is
envy.
And the quality that keeps us within the material world perpetually is envy. So it is by envy that we came here, and it's by envy that we stay here. And the Bhagavad Gita is for those who are nimatsara, which means those who are free from envy. So we see in this pastime that the queens have become envious, which is not entirely, we cannot entirely criticize them, because there's great reason for them to be upset. They've been neglected by the husband, they have no children. It's very, psychologically, that's very difficult for a woman. For a woman not to have a child is very psychologically challenging. And to be neglected by the husband is also extremely difficult for the woman. So it is not an easy situation for the woman to be in. But still, to go to the extent of poison the child, that's, yeah, way too much. That's, you know, it's inexcusable. So this is the nature of envy within this material world. And because of envy, people do the most abominable things, like that, the most horrible things, even though they poison the child. So they have not benefited, no one else has benefited, like that, so many things. But because of envy, we do so many things that we should not do. Just like Krishna says to Arjuna, Arjuna says to Krishna, why do I do things that I know, in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, near the end, why do I do things even that I know are not good? Even unwillingly, as if by force I am propelled to do things. Why do I act like that, even against my will, practically? So this is the power of lust, this is the power of envy, there's the power of greed, there's the power of pride, all these negative qualities. They practically force us sometimes to do things even against their will. Even we know we should not do it. But when you get overcome or overpowered or polluted by any of these negative qualities, sometimes you do the most abominable activities, okay, which you know that you should not do.
When the pastor of Dhruva Maharaj, Suniti and Suruti came also, although Suniti was neglected, and even the child because he was born of her. But Suniti is so good attitude, even she teaches Dhruva Maharaj saying that although, like, you know, the stepmother's words are so harsh, but it is good for you. And then she gives one very good instruction. I always keep remembering that she says that you should never wish bad to others. And, you know, if you do that, then it will come back to you only. So always be very good instruction Suniti gives to Dhruva Maharaj. Even though other people do, still we should be good. Like, we should not think bad of other people, because if you do that, then that will come back to us only. So very good instruction. So Suniti takes in a very good, although she was so neglected, you know, but still she, her attitude is very
good. Point. Any other points? Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritajyoti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, please bring my son here." When the maidservant approached the child, who was lying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upward. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could see, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground, unconscious. O King Parikshit, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally aggrieved, they also began to cry. The queens who had administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire. And as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling on the ground. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and the learned brahmanas present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu, merged in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family, she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain in the cause of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers and all the brahmanas. The garland of flowers decorating the queen's head fell and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the collyrium on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a karari bird. "Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation, for during the lifetime of a father you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful. That's your question.
So what is Karari bird in this 53 X 53?
What is the question?
Karari bird. The as she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet song of Kurari bird.
What is the question?
So, what do we understand by Kurari bird? Because they are saying loud crying resembled the sweet song of Kurari bird. Contrast.
It sounded like
page 42.
Yeah. It sounded like the Kurari bird. That's
the woman didn't cry when somebody died, you know. There was special was coming to them. We have seen in India a lot of women cry, and when somebody died, they have special way of crying. And, you know, even they don't cry, some of them they make sure they look like crying. And if they don't cry, the other woman come and try to beat them. They don't cry. Last woman, you know. You have seen in the village, you know. Women don't want to cry, the other people come and the woman beat them to cry. They're just called Kurari bird. And they have a special, you know, they merge into like this sort of thing. They haven't seen people die in India. When we are from India, we really know people. In Australia, people, they don't do things to worry at home. India people bring the body around, the people, the village women, they have a set of things that hold the cry. You know, they're supposed to do that. Like a TV doll, the mother is low, I don't know the TV.
Does that answer your question?
If I'm making 20, I'm going to go
back. Common in
Punjab.
Are you satisfied? So, what was your question?
As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled a sweet song.
So what is the question?
The contrast was, if the lady is lamenting, how resembles the sweet song?
You have to ask your wife.
He's a doctor, you know, he probably knows how to cry again. Because he all the left one is attacking. So, bother. But when you see what a common thing that happens in a family, they really have a big drama in there.
Acha. Is everyone satisfied? Yeah, I have to make some comments.
This is the way a conditioned soul.
No, wait. Oh, no, sorry. Right, we were about to read it, right? Yeah. Sorry. Are you okay, Elmo?
This is the way a conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator when he meets reverses. Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked, because some people are happy and some are not. Here the Queen blames Supreme Providence for the son's death. Following the creative law, a father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of Providence, then Providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the created being. Actually, it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how the subtle laws of fruitive activity work. And without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
What are the points here?
You cannot criticize Almighty Lord, for whatever he does is correct.
What was the difference on which yoga this pastime was taken to? Because in Satya Yoga, the
the first come, first go is not the later one to go before the first. So if this was the pastime of Bhakti Yuga, what Mataji is saying is correct, because in those days, the father would go first, then follow the mother.
Any other points? I don't think when it says 1 million, it literally means 1 million. If you look at the Sanskrit, it doesn't actually say a million. Prabhupada is saying like that. When sometimes in India they say something, and it's not exactly true, but you kind of get the point. So things like that, it means he had many wives, like probably hundreds, like that. But I don't think a million. I mean, how could he have a million wives? Literally, how could he have? Krishna had 16,000. How could he have a million? You know, like that. But it means a great deal, because the Sanskrit, that doesn't actually say a million. Like that, so. Any other points?
Sure. There's a
pastime
actually where when you Lord Ramachandra's son, there is a man who actually came to Lord Ramachandra's palace and said he started condemning Lord Ramachandra because his son died before him, and it was nothing that was there before, that something like that had happened. And apparently Lord Ramachandra actually went and found out that the Shudra was actually trying to read scriptures, and as a result, the son died before, because it was unheard of. And therefore, a lot of them straight away feel that Shudra was trying to save
the scriptures. That's also a story with Arjuna and Krishna when they went to the Brahmana to teach them.
Yes, and even 5,000 years ago, it was not a common thing. It's not even a common thing today, but 5,000 years ago, it was uncommon. So, as Kali Yuga progresses, then sinful reactions become more and more prominent. So we're seeing now that many unnatural things are taking place on the earth, both individually and communally. And we're seeing that the reactions are becoming more and more powerful, more and more prominent. And we're seeing so many unnatural things take place now. Just like I was giving class this morning, and I've said before, that 50%, if you look at Australia's landmass, and we're pointing out this morning that if you take Western Europe, the whole of Western Europe, it fits within about one third of Australia. So Australia is a huge landmass. And 50% of the landmass of Australia at this point in time is being used to grow beef cattle. So just bulls and cows, which have been used simply for slaughter. 50% of the Australian landmass, which is, that shows how sinful this country actually is. So it is just a matter of time, with so many unnatural activities taking place, it's just a matter of time until the sinful reactions become manifest within society. So we see that in Kali Yuga, the sinful reactions, they become more and more prominent, and people's lives become more and more unnatural. So there's so many unnatural, strange things. Every day in the news we hear stranger and stranger things taking place. And this is simply because of the sinful reactions of the people. And you'll see, particularly in the Middle East, you hear about all sorts of very strange things taking place, because there's so much sinful activity in these countries. Because women are being abused, children are being abused, cows are being abused, old people are being abused. So many things are being abused, then there'll be so many reactions will come upon society because of all these activities. Any questions?
Therefore, we should spread holy.
Should.
Spread the holy name all around. Yes. So people become pious. Mm-hmm. Thinking become pious.
Okay. Which verse?
55.
My Lord, you may say that there is no law, that a father must die in this lifetime, in the lifetime of his son, and that a son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruitive activity. However, if fruitive activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there is no need of a controller or God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that if the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruitive action, no one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent.
As stated in the Brahma Sutra, one who has taken to Krishna consciousness devotional service is not affected by the results of karma. In this verse, karma has been stressed on the basis of karma mamansa bhakti, which says that one must act according to his karma and that the supreme controller must give the result of karma. The certain laws of karma, which are controlled by the Supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, Krishna says that one who can understand him and how he is acting, controlling everything by certain laws, immediately becomes freed by his grace. This is the statement of Brahma Samhita. One should take to devotional service without reservation and surrender everything to the Supreme will of the Lord. That will make one happy in this lifetime and the next.
Okay. Any points?
There is a lecture which we are hearing from Govind Prabhu, which is also shared in Bhakti Shakti class last week. This is the fate of devotees who died in the Nepal earthquake. I'm not sure if I spoke about this before, but he was saying in that lecture again and again that just because we are devotees, we shouldn't expect that natural experiences of the material world are not applicable for us. We should always have divine experiences in our life. Because we are in the material world, and the material world is a bad place. It will be as such. So a devotee, that's why he says that even when Arjuna was in so much of anxiety in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna did not just tell him that everything will be alright after all, you are my intimate devotee. In fact, he says that Lord Krishna actually told him that Matras Parshastu Pramataya Sita Usna Sukhadupada. He went through all those verses where he's saying that the devotee must have the tolerance because this material world is going to give us rewards and slaps. So we have to accept that it is a material world and just continue praying to the Lord. There's no other choice. So this material world is not going to become perfect simply because we have started chanting or doing some devotional work. That was a big eye opener.
Any other points? Yeah.
Can you tell us something about karma mimamsa?
I can't remember how it works, to be honest. About that. It's, you know, it's in the pastime of the Govardhana. It's when Krishna convinces Nanda Maharaj. So it's mentioned at that point, and then if you read the commentary in the Bhagavatam, there's an explanation of it. Like that, but I've never really paid a lot of attention to it, and I've never really memorized it, so I'm not an expert on it. So I can't really. Any other points? Okay. So, by the arrangement of providence, everything in our life becomes arranged. So, we have to understand that everything that happens to us in this material world is the arrangement of a higher intelligence. To try to instruct us in a particular way. So that's difficult to accept because it's not always easy in this material world. But the fact is, if a devotee can learn to see like that, then he becomes Dayava, which means you become a rightful heir to the kingdom of God. In other words, if you can understand that everything which is happening in our life is the arrangement of Krishna to teach us a superior lesson, to bring us closer to Him, then we can, if we have that attitude, we can progress a great deal in spiritual life. However, it's very difficult to accept these things when extremely calamitous situations take place. You know, probably none of us have ever experienced a child being taken away from us. So it's an extremely psychologically difficult situation. Even I know of, I've never met, but I know of devotees who have lost children like that, and it's extremely disturbing. Yeah, extremely disturbing. So it's easy to say these things, but when you actually go through something that difficult, it's very difficult too. But if somehow or other, in due course of time, or if one can do it at the time, but in due course of time, if one can accept that this was Krishna's higher arrangement, and accept this was Krishna's will and desire, and still surrender to Krishna and worship Krishna deep within one's heart, then one can transcend this material energy. Is this some sort of joke, Lilamai?
No, okay,
I
just came to pick up.
You've never been this late before.
I didn't come for a class. I came to pick up the room, so I didn't come. I did not want to miss Bhavana for 10 minutes at least. At least 10 minutes.
Thank you for coming. Okay. Any points? Okay. My dear son, I am helpless and very much aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Just look at your lamenting father. We are helpless because without a son, we shall have to suffer the distress of going to the darkest hellish regions. You are the only hope by which we can get out of these dark regions. Therefore, I request you not to go any further with the merciless Yama. So,
can you please read from the iBook?
The first is Vedic injunction. One must accept a wife just to beget a son who can deliver one to the clutches of Yamaraj. Unless one has a son to offer oblations to the Pitas or forefathers, one must suffer in Yamaraj's kingdom. King Chitragetu was very much aggrieved, thinking that because the son was going away with Yamaraj, he himself would again suffer. The subtle laws exist for the karmi. If one becomes a devotee, he has no more obligation to the law of karma.
Any questions?
We see the mood of Shiva Sandhya to us. Such a great devotee, his son had also died, but his consciousness was totally different. In fact, he told the ladies of the house not to cry and give the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu peace and that was going on in the house.
Yeah, that was the most powerful example of a pure devotee.
You see, that's only because of the attachment of the suffering is there.
What's that?
You can see that only due to the attachment the suffering is there. Shiva's son was not suffering because he could see differently in the detached way, but this one is unattached.
Yeah. Any other points?
So we can see the extent of selfishness, like you say, like the love our children and everything, but at the end of the day, there is a selfish motive behind it. And just this morning, we're also lamenting that, oh, he's gone and nobody is there to take care of me.
Anything else?
So in this pastime, what I'm understanding is, generally, we hear in the news or everywhere in the newspaper or from someone that every day someone is telling us something bad is happening. We are not so disturbed. But the same thing is happening to a person whom we like more, who are very dear to us. If something happens to us, we forget everything and we go into that lamentation condition. And it takes some, for some people, years. I don't know, some people, maybe lifetimes. Generally, with me, it takes me months. I cannot come out of that. What could be the practical solution? I mean, I know Krishna has a plan behind this. the mental platform, it's so frustrating.
It requires practice. It requires advancement in Krishna consciousness. Especially through chanting, then one can become transcendental in one's consciousness. One can transcend these things. But it requires a great deal of practice.
And also in this, see here, when there is a reversal, immediately people start blaming Krishna. I see even in devotees also who become very rebellious. So what kind of, you know, how do we really bring them back? I mean, how we can give them faith in Krishna when there is reversal? When everything goes good, everyone says, hey, Krishna is so merciful to me, all these words we can hear. But when actually Krishna tests our faith, sometimes it's very tough.
Yeah. So that's the same for all of us. We have to learn to advance in Krishna consciousness. Whether you handle me roughly by your embrace or make me brokenhearted by not being present before me, still you are my Lord, birth after birth. So we have to develop that consciousness. It requires practice. It takes time. Keep working on it.
Okay. What you're saying, you have to surrender more.
Over time. So we see that what is the concern of Chitraketu, that he needs a son to do pinda so that he will be delivered from sinful reactions, and the forefathers will also be delivered from sinful reactions. So as we pointed out last night, this is not the consciousness of a devotee. None of us think like that. We don't think, oh, I need children so they will deliver me from sinful reactions. We don't think like that. So for one who is engaged in karma kanda or Vedic rituals, then one gets into all these types of consciousness. Devotees, we don't have to think like that. We think if we just surrender to Krishna, we'll become liberated. If our children surrender to Krishna, they'll liberate us also. Like that. So we think like that. We don't get into all these material calculations. Like that. Okay. My dear son, you have slept a long time. Now please get up. Your playmates are calling you to play. Since you must be very hungry, please get up and suck my breast and dissipate our lamentation. My dear son, I am certainly most unfortunate, for I can no longer see your mild smiling. You have closed your eyes forever. I therefore conclude that you have been taken from this planet to another from which you will not return. My dear son, I can no longer hear your pleasing voice. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, accompanied by his wife who was thus lamenting for her dead son. King Chitraketu began crying loudly with an open mouth, being greatly aggrieved. As the king and queen lamented, all their male and female followers joined them in crying. Because of the sudden accident, all of the citizens of the kingdom were almost unconscious. When the great sage Angira understood that the king was almost dead in an ocean of lamentation, he went there with Narada, a rishi. So when we're in our most distressful situations, the devotees will deliver us. So when Angira and Narada, they see Chitraketu is in the right situation to be delivered, then they approach him. So the devotees, when we're in a very difficult situation, they will come and they will deliver us by their transcendental instructions, their Divya Jnana, and they will take us to a higher state of consciousness. So Chitraketu, by the arrangement of Angira, by his mercy, is given an opportunity now that he can advance in his Krishna consciousness. So, you have a point?
He went back and he said that Jesus take him out and he took him to the other planet, and he said it was so good and he saw his grandfather doing that, and now they're showing the father on the earth, and he was blaming God. He was saying, oh God, you know, how you what can I say? If you treat the pastors like that, what can I say to others? What can I say for them? And then Jesus Christ came to the child and he told him, you have to go back. And he said, no, I don't want to go back. And he said, why I have to go back? And he said, your father was praying, you know, so you have to go back.
they return back the child and the child returned back, and he was telling how he went there, and the father was actually really saying that he was, that was the prayer he was saying. Why you, you know, you're treating your pastor like that? What's about the other? So that's really very similar story, except that the child really returned back.
Yeah. Krishna oversees those things, and he delivers the person. Okay, we'll stop there. So next Monday we'll have the overview of chapters 7 to 13. Tuesday we'll have a continued class on the next chapter 15, and then the week after that you will have your exam on the Monday night. I won't be physically present, but you will have your exam, so sit the exam as per normal, 7 to 9. And then, from then on, for a couple of weeks, we'll have we'll attempt to have long distance phone call classes like that. There won't be any classes for the 2 days, the Monday and the Tuesday, within the Janmashtami week, which I think, from memory, I think is the 6th and 7th of August. So there won't be any classes in that week. But otherwise, we will attempt. I'm going to India for about a month, so I'm going to continue the classes on the Monday and Tuesday, but I'll be ringing. You can ring me. And then I still want everyone to come here to the theatre. Please do that. That would be good. And we'll continue to hold the classes, and we'll see how successful it is. If we can have keep the reception, if the phone keeps cutting out or something, then we'll just say, okay, it's not going to work, and we'll go to plan B, which means I'll have to record a class and put it on the internet or something like that. But we'll attempt to do it. That's fine. Already I'm starting to feel better, so I can only conclude that's because of all of your prayers. That's my only conclusion. So please continue to pray for me, and hopefully I'll be feeling back to normal. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.